Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. As you heard me introduce myself at the theme music there on our opening segment, on this November the 11th, or on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, we're now experiencing November the 12th. 2008, we will be discussing more of what we have talked about on the last three shows, or I should say maybe even the last four shows, because we began a series last Thursday with Michael Anthony, which continued Friday with Jim Murray, and then I sort of did a solo monologue on Monday of this week, and then we had kind of an open forum even last night. Got some calls from some interesting people, and Reverend Roxy Hampton called in and stayed with me for a good part of the second hour. We got to talk about quite a few things here, and what we're doing, what we're trying to do together, and I say we because you're playing as much a part in this as I am. We're discovering and exploring some solutions to many of the problems that people are awakening to. We see that the world is changing very rapidly, and there's a lot of fear out there. There's definitely a lot of chaos everywhere you go. It seems like the more government we have, especially here in the United States, the more chaotic things get. So changing the size of government or making government larger isn't necessarily the answer. In fact, it enables those that are participating in government to be more corrupted at every level. So that's changing the size of the government's not helping us. Now, should we be even expecting or counting on the government to solve our problems when that's not their purpose? They're serving us. They're not supposed to be leading us, per se. We're supposed to be leading them. They're supposed to be carrying out our wishes, and they are basically representatives or agents for what the consensus of the populace desires. And that is the nature of how the United States was in its foundation, and I'm speaking back into the 1600s and the 1700s, the United States was founded on freedom. And there were many freedoms involved there. Freedom from the impositions of royal taxes and the slavery that's involved. Freedom of religion, freedom of expression. It seems like America's early history was involved in shaking the shackles off of the repression of the British royalty. And of course, this is something that's been going on for thousands of years all over the earth. When I say thousands, the most recent history is at least 13 and probably 15,000 years, but we can easily go back a half a million years of this kind of repression, one society after another. So this is not something new, yet it changes every generation, and right now we're witnessing the tail end of a 100 to 150-year plan to take over this country. It's been ramped up, it's been sped up, and the bottom line still is, how conscious are we as human beings? Are we even human beings? Because we've been dumbed down almost to a robotic state, and if somebody doesn't throw the power switch, we're totally non-functional. And if we do function, it's on a couch in front of the boop tube with a six-pack of beer and a bag of potato chips. Now, that may sound like a trite, overused metaphor, but it's very accurate. Whether you like the sound of it or not, or whether I like the sound of it, it's the average human or American household, I should say, and we neglect our children, we neglect our responsibilities to ourselves, to our mates, to our communities, and to the whole of society. Definitely we are out of tune with what's going on in the rest of the universe when we act in such ways. In fact, our attention is really focused on just a microcosm of everything that exists. And we are in a matrix. We are in a maze or a puzzle. We're a part of that puzzle. We're a piece of that puzzle. And until we recognize that, we're not going to extricate ourselves from this imprisonment. And while time ticks on, the intention of those that have created this matrix is to totally enslave us, even get rid of us, should we disclose too much of the truth, or should we arrive at the truth and really understand what is going on. Well, that's what's happening right now. And in order to empower you, in order to dispel the fear that they would love for you to exhibit. And believe me, I have these talks with people every day about fear. Many people don't even know where fear begins and where it ends. It's become such a regular part of their experience on a day-to-day basis. So we're going to dispel fear. We're going to talk about things that might be a little bit uncomfortable to talk about for you or for you to hear, but nonetheless, we have an obligation to face these things. We can't pretend that they're not going on. And if we're going to solve problems, we need to get serious about our problem solving and the nature of the problems and come up with some solutions that are practical for all of us. All that said, I've been getting tons of email from listeners who are really enjoying these conversations, whether it's on a monologue or with a guest as we have tonight, where we discuss these issues and we put it to a practical use, or we put it in practice so that you can see how this works. We're going to review some of the issues of responsibility, communication, awareness, attention, this aspect of being serious about it and how we assist each other, what our higher goals can be and what our dreams can be, using our creativity and our imagination and achieving something positive and reclaiming our personal power, our God-given power. So with that, we are going to continue along these lines with tonight's guest. He is himself a metaphysical scientist, an author, a journalist, an investigative journalist, and a quite good one. He is an editor of his own website, educate-yourself.org. And I guess you could also call him, if I haven't said this, he's a metaphysical scientist and an inventor. And his name is Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thank you, Don. Great to be on with you again.
Well, it's great to have you. I hope you got to hear what I said, so I don't have to repeat it. I'm trying to just give a synopsis of what we've been talking about. There are some people tuning in for the first time tonight. And I don't know if you got to listen to any of the shows that we did the last few nights, but we've been talking about solutions. And giving people some ammunition, let's say, you know, to reclaim their sovereignty.
Right.
And their freedom. Ultimately, we're looking at countermanding what's going on in the world today.
Yes.
By the powers that be.
Yes, your preamble was perfect because those thoughts need to be heard. I wish everyone in the country who listens to radio or television could hear your monologues, particularly because you express the ideas that I feel are most important in not allowing the circumstances that we are surrounded with to cow us and to frighten us so much that we're simply fearful of the future, and we're fearful of what to do. We don't know what to do, and there are many forces at work impinging on our life precisely to create this inner anxiety and worry and fretting about the future. We're literally being manipulated as if we were puppets on a stage, and there are puppeteers. Some of them off-worlders, aliens, who are essentially overseeing the operation of enslaving humanity, and then you have the human or the human-slash-alien hybrid representatives here on Earth who are inputting the program, let's say, or putting the agenda in place. We just had a person elected to the President of the United States that is one of these agents. He's Barack Obama is not who he claims to be, as you've made clear in your very well-written articles exposing Barack Obama's background. He is an agent that has been groomed from childhood to play the role that he is now playing. And he will continue to lead America down the path of destruction is just as much as the George Bush administration did, Bush 2 as well as Bush 1 as well as Clinton did. Most of the presidents we've had since, or one could even say from FDR forward, have been tightly controlled by this controlling elite, which I normally refer to as the Illuminati. It's the easiest handle to put on them. So, just to make it convenient, that's the term. There are many terms, and we know that this fraternity is made up of very wealthy people for the most part, corporate heads from major corporations around the world. It includes the royal families of Europe and Asia, and it includes so-called bloodline families, both here and abroad, that Fritz Springmeier, for instance, wrote about in his book exposing the makeup of the Illuminati. We know that it includes the upper hierarchy of Freemasons, upper hierarchy of many organizations, including religious organizations like the Mormons and even the Vatican, etc. So we know there's a very strong Nazi element of this so-called New World Order. The Nazis really didn't lose World War II. What they did is essentially they went into an underground guerrilla mode following World War II, but they very much infiltrated the United States government, particularly the CIA. The CIA is a Nazi-founded institution, and Foster Allen Dulles and Bill Donovan and George Bush Sr. and Otto Skorzeny and Bill Donovan, etc., were the front men that did the groundwork to get it off the ground. So Americans need to know that we're being led by people who are interested in destroying us. This is the hardest thing most people can't come to grips with. They have been intentionally locked down into this artificial debate between conservatives, liberals, Republican, Democrats. It's an artifice. There is no reality to it. And those, particularly on the left, who recognize and decry the war in Afghanistan and Iraq and the injustices taking place at Guantanamo and other military prisons around the world in which people are being tortured, and God knows how many people have been murdered in Iraq and Afghanistan, innocent people who had nothing whatsoever to do with the war effort. These deaths are taking place because the traitors who are involved in manipulating our government and are pushing the United States intentionally into war to create worldwide animosity against the U.S. So we will be hated exactly the same the way Nazis were hated during the Second World War. And secondarily, in order to collapse the country from within, they've exited all of our major industrial production capabilities, starting somewhere in the late 50s, early 60s, up to this date, so that we need to import most of the goods that we use, and even now the military is the ultimate of insanity. Anyone who's in the military or understands the basic concepts of security for your of military security for your own country, you produce your weaponry within your own country. You don't farm out the contracts to produce your aircraft with Airbus in Europe, which is a conglomerate of French and German companies and so forth. And this is what we've been doing in the last, it's just shocking to have read these stories. Actually, this outsourcing of military equipment, uniform, manufacturing of secret military systems and missile systems, etc., outsourcing it outside of the United States. That's military strategy 101. You don't do that. If you're really interested in protecting your country, which the people in charge of this, at the helm of power in this country are not. They're interested in betraying us in order to destroy us. And that's the hardest thing people can't come to grips with. They assume this is an overstatement, it's an exaggeration, it's crazy, it's conspiracy theory, wacko talk, et cetera, et cetera. It's reality.
I can draw an analogy, Ken, just on the basis of the research piece I did featuring the Scherf, a.k.a. Bush family. Samuel P. Bush, who was running Buckeye Steel Castings in Columbus, Ohio, for Percy Rockefeller, and actually Frank and Percy Rockefeller were kind of both involved with that, while John was focusing on the oil and Standard Oil Company. They had appointed Samuel P. Bush to be on the War Industries Board, and primarily they were having all the ammunition made by Remington Arms. Mm-hmm. All the ammunition that was being used by American soldiers to be fired at German soldiers was also being given to the Germans to fire back at Americans. Now, we have the same situation today. This came to light about 2 years ago during the time when it was announced that there was a company called Hutchison Whampoa in Ports, Dubai, two companies vying for control of American ports. What the hell would anyone be thinking, or why would they be thinking of giving control of our ports to a
American
foreign country?
To Middle Eastern countries, right. Absolute insanity.
Yes, and it's a Saudi Arabian country now that is, or a company that is actually making the weapons, the bullets that our soldiers are using over there. And now, in the example of the Germans shot our soldiers with those weapons. Do you think that the same scenario is not going on in Iraq or Afghanistan? Where are these people getting their weapons from?
Mm-hmm.
Being under the attack that they're under from this cabal, this Bush-Cheney cabal.
Mm-hmm.
It's the writing's on the wall. That we see the same thing underway. Now, if we get in a war with China, you can look to China to be making bullets being sold to the United States. the writing's on the wall, folks.
Yes,
and
right.
These are not exaggerations. I would like to add one more thing, too. And you rightfully mentioned Franklin Delano Roosevelt. If you go back as far as the turn of the century and Teddy Roosevelt was the guy that started the Great White Fleet. And for a couple of years, starting in 1907, the time that John Sidney McCain Sr. supposedly was 1 year out of the graduating class at Annapolis, having graduated, and I put that in quotes, in 1906, and becoming an admiral, it's quite clear that Teddy Roosevelt was working for the Illuminati and the Great White Brotherhood. And they started the Great White Fleet, which was just showing muscle around the world.
Right.
And teaching these guys on how to put their smuggling connections together, you know, their network,
yeah,
basically, is what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And they were shipping arms, they were shipping drugs, and jewels, cash, and likely human trafficking, the same things that are going on today.
Yes.
It's not really changed. So we have well over 100 years of that having gone on. And Roosevelt himself owned the shipping companies on which both John McCain, a.k.a. Sidney McCain Sr., and Albert McCain, a.k.a. John Sidney McCain, Jr., were working on crews for that United States lines.
Right.
Owned by Roosevelt, which he had put in his son Kermit's name.
Yes.
And so we have a history of this going on. People being bribed. The Germans bragged about how they could bribe people at the customs entry points at Ellis Island, and I discovered those things. So we had built-in traitors. We were bribed, or our people were bribed by the Germans, and this was their little secret, and it's probably still going on today. I mean, they're telling us they're protecting our borders while they're letting millions of people illegally enter the country. While we're fighting terrorism, they're letting the terrorists in. Tell me that that's not insane. Go ahead.
Yes.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
Right. Well, yes, I'm glad you're able to amplify on the point. I can only think that, you know, when by the way, your discoveries of the ownership by Roosevelt, using his son's name, of those freight lines, et cetera, that bought in those German infiltrators that eventually wound us setting up the Federal Reserve System in 1913, et cetera. And, you know, these infiltrators have played a big role in sending our country on the path of, you know, ultimate destruction that we are now, you know, dealing with the end product of those efforts in the beginning of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reviewing this in the interest of trying to make it known to listeners of this tape that they must come to grip with this basic reality. There is certainly enough evidence. People who are willing to read, many very decent authors have, through the decades, going back to the 1930s, for instance, there was a Canadian admiral in the Canadian Navy by the name of William Carr, who after World War One saw the game. He recognized that wars are artificially created, World War One, for instance, and that there's this controlling cabal behind the scenes that are making money in the game of war. They're aggrandizing power, and they're making a great deal of money using the pretext that these wars are just accidental events from the natural unfolding of history. Nothing could be further from the truth. So he started to look into it very deep because he was high up in the Canadian Naval Command. He got to see what was really going on, and he wrote a terrific book that, and he used to go around and do lectures in the 30s, talking about Americans and Canadians, trying to forewarn them of this Illuminati cabal, similar to after the French Revolution, in which that I mentioned in a previous talk, that horse rider in France who was a courier for mm-hmm. the Bavarian Illuminati was struck down by lightning, and within his courier satchel he had all these plans to infiltrate the various capitals of Europe and to repeat the French Revolution. Bavaria was supposed to be the next on the list. They exposed this at the time, and they essentially warned the whole world, and that set the Illuminati back perhaps 100 years, that discovery. And so, William Carr stumbled upon this information during World War One and immediately following, and then by the mid-30s into the 40s, and even into the early 50s, he was doing these talks all around. He was like a lone voice. Now, there were others after World War II. Anthony Sutton, working under a grant, had a chance to examine secret archives in Europe following the war, and he discovered much of the same sort of inner machinations that John Coleman, for instance, discovered when he worked for British intelligence, and he spent 10 or 15 years researching for that agency in the British Library, and he discovered all these inner secret workings that the public never hears about or sees or reads, but the archives are there, and for people who have the guts and the character to expose it, they've given us a great deal of valuable information. Now, in modern times, I find the books of David Icke to be one of the better sources of revealing this information. Now, Icke has built much of his information on the work of others, and he doesn't always give credit, particularly in the case of John Coleman, to where he acquired his, but nevertheless, David Icke's books, he started to come out of the box somewhere in the early 90s, 93, somewhere around the 94, with his first books. And by 96 or 97, 98, he was into his third or fourth book, and his biggest secret, 1999 book, went into great detail, revealing the presence of these reptilian aliens, which we've talked about often in these talks together. These are the overlords of, if you will, the alien overlords of the New World Order takeover of Earth, and how many of their, probably the majority of their representative agents are hybrids of these alien individuals. They have both human genetic makeup as well as a reptilian, and they have this capability to shift appearance into the reptilian form. This is obviously not something they normally would do in a public setting, but it's happened. On occasion, there are, particularly when they get emotionally riled, the mechanisms that they use to cloak and to appear human seem to distort or have some sort of minor breakdown. And we can see their appearance begin to take on this scaly, bumpy sort of appearance. in previous shows, we've mentioned there are YouTube videos that, if one were to do a Google search for, let's say, reptilian shapeshifters on YouTube, you would see many instances of TV, particularly Fox News reporters, doing a news segment in which they will begin this process of their shapes, you know, their face is distorting into the reptilian form. I have a couple articles on my website in which I've taken one of these YouTube videos, and I took a still frame of the person. This particular guy, his name was, he's still on Fox News. I think he's out of the Midwest somewhere, Minnesota perhaps. His name is Rob Olson. He's a Fox News reporter. And you can see him. I have the article. I've had the article up there for a couple years. It's only like a minute and a half news clip, but during that time, the man's face totally distorts into the reptilian form. It's just remarkable. And there are dozens of these videos of shape shifting usually reporters. There's a video I've seen of Nancy Pelosi partially shape shifting into the reptilian form. Bush One has been, video is seen of his eyes shape shifting into vertical slits.
Well, yeah, and you can see that on the Hurricane Katrina commercial, the fundraiser for the USAfreedom.org, I think they call it.
Oh, is that the one with Clinton?
Yeah, 41 and Clinton are sitting there together.
Right.
And yeah, he's got the eyelid thing where the eyelids actually look like the eyelids on a frog or a snake, you know, with that little film that folds over and protects the eye when they go underwater. His eyes are doing that.
That's a very good observation. Now that you said it, I know what you're talking about. Yep, I saw it. So people can go onto YouTube and catch that. By the way, it's occurred to me, one of the possible reasons, because I'm just speculating, but one of the possible reasons for the mandatory switch over to digital TV is that I'm guessing that probably with digital TV, they can install filter systems that will prevent the broadcast of those, you know, segments, because it's, you know, news is usually a live broadcast. And I don't think we're going to see any future examples of shape-shifting on camera because of the digital TV technology. I think they'll be able to automatically filter it out and or prevent it from being seen by the viewer. And I think that's part of the reason why they're rushing to do this mandatory switchover. I mean, if things were really on the level, there's no way they would be forcing this on us. If they were going to do this, they would have co-broadcast analog and digital for who knows, 10, 15, 20, or 25 years. And then so many people by that point would have just naturally gotten rid of older analog TVs and switched over to digital, that if things were on the level, they would have just gradually segued into digital-only broadcast. But this prompt, immediate, just with 1 year's notice, bing, bam, boom, no debate in Congress about it, just boom, it's done, we're switching over, that's it, February 17th, get ready, get your agreement. No, that's not natural.
Well, Ken, I think in terms of, and I'm inclined to agree with you, in terms of what they're doing, can you see any cause for having high-definition shopping channels or for that matter, even Praise the Lord TV program in high-definition?
Right.
I think we're only a few months away from scratch-and-sniff television.
Right. Right. Well, in the article that I put up, my main supposition is that they're switching over in the interest of monitoring and surveilling. There are, in modern televisions, there are, I believe, and I had one guy from Australia confirm this because he says he's taken apart plasma screens and high-definition TVs, and he found these micro cameras that are embedded within the screen, so naturally they're looking at you. And naturally, if they can have cameras that small, we're talking very, very small cameras, they obviously have microphone pickup. So in talking to you about this on the phone privately a few weeks ago, you had mentioned that you believe that they've embedded monitoring, which means microphone and possibly cameras, in televisions as far back as perhaps even the 80s when they started to put up infrared remote control TVs.
Oh, even the 70s and maybe even late 60s.
Okay. So
yeah, ever since they had solid state, it was possible to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I did get an email from somebody who did confirm that he had talked to an investigator who specialized in electronics, and he this was 10 years ago. He said he was at his shop, and the guy showed him specifically these cameras that are embedded in television, the microphones. He had them in his parts bin there. So he says, you know, so I'm thinking that the digital technology is going to allow greater capabilities to send the data back to the NSA, for instance. It could be they had to, who knows, use satellites or whatever to activate this equipment for targeted individuals. But if everyone who has these TVs, I believe the digital circuitry that they're insisting on us has within it hidden technology that allows the signal to both come into the house as well as in monitoring surveillance information to go out. That makes sense to me. And I'll tell you something interesting also, what's going on in my house, for instance. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned to you that my computer was Adobe Photoshop program was surreptitiously opened for mm-hmm. me while I just took a brief moment to go to the kitchen to grab some food. And when I came back, I found this picture displayed on my screen. We talked about this on a previous show.
Yeah.
And you were able to examine the file, and you found the encoding within the photo that essentially commanded my computer to open up the Adobe program and to display this picture, which I never downloaded. It was you know, sent into my computer. And I'm just using a dial-up. So they're coming mm-hmm. in through my phone line to input this info. Now,
we also determined who sent that to you too.
Yeah, right. You were able to analyze that it was Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and there, what was the other agency?
Adobe Systems.
Yeah, the Adobe people, right, were allowed them to embed, or they're working in cahoots with them to gain access to. So everyone who's using Adobe, you know, the PDF readers or Adobe
Photoshop,
exactly.
Yeah.
They can access your computer because Adobe's working with these guys, you know, Pentagon, etc. So yeah, you were able to expose that very, very well. And I still have to write about that. I want to put up that story and go
into
great. Yeah,
Hewlett-Packard Printers has a similar feature that sort of takes over your computer if you're using a scanner or just a basic printer.
Right.
It keeps trying to go online and downloading upgrades and all of that, regardless of what format your computer is.
Right. Very good. Yes, and you know, if you look at the corporate structure, Hewlett-Packard, you know that they're a player. They're one of their many corporate people. What I'm getting to, though, however, since that day in which that event happened with the Photoshop, every time I do go online, we have two computers. We have one in the back room. We have the other in the kitchen area.
Mm-hmm.
My wife uses hers in the kitchen area, and I use another one in this back room where I work. And every time I go online, her computer turns on automatically. Now, prior to that Adobe event that we're talking about, the picture, that mm-hmm. never happened. So what's happening is somehow when go online, I'm automatically hooked into their surveillance monitoring system, and somehow a feedback signal is coming back that for some quirk of electronics is causing my wife's computer to turn on. because she mentioned this to me a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't make the connection immediately, but it was in the wake, come to think of it. Yeah.
Well, it could be in the email that came in. In other words, if you've addressed the email issue on the one computer but not on the other, that email still may be in the computer, and so that command is just sitting there waiting, you know, in the background.
Well, she didn't get the email. I mean, you got to remember, she has her own email address, so
yeah,
she
but,
doesn't get.
Can you access your email from her computer?
I've never tried to do that. Intentionally so. So she.
If it's
no,
the
I've
same,
never tried to get my
yeah.
email from her.
If it's the same IP address or the same account.
Oh, it's the same account. Yes, of course.
Well, then it may be in that computer.
Okay. Well, anyway, I just thought I'd mention that, you know, that this was not the case before. That we've had these computers now for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And, every time I go online, her automatically, of course her computer's off, it automatically boots up. Okay, anyway. We want to first stress that this takeover conspiracy is happening, and every morning when I get up and I'm hungry to listen to news, and there's only two radio stations that I can listen to here that have any sort of talk that I'm interested in. That's NPR, National Public Radio, and which is out of Pasadena for me. And then the second station I listen to is KPFK, which is out of Los Angeles. Now, KPFK is what you would say on the left, very much so on the left. And in many of the issues, I have the same sentiments that they have. Particularly, they're very good about reporting the wrongness and wickedness of the war, treatment of prisoners, and that sort of thing. Now, however, which is what frustrates me and causes me, there are a lot of people who ascribe to liberal philosophy. I have many areas of belief that you normally think of as liberal, but also I have other principles that you could call conservative, I suppose. So I'm not in really one camp or the other, but I'm interested in justice and honesty and truth, which is the same thing you strive to learn, achieve. So I find it so frustrating, however, is that while Amy Goodman, for instance, has a national show, she's has a lot of good guests on. However, she carries water for the Illuminati, as does Sonali Kolhatkar, as another woman, Margaret, somebody or other. She has a truth call, Sojourn the Truth. I hear all these shows one after the other, because as I'm working, I just carry her on my little Walkman with me with earbuds as I'm working. So I usually have the station on for 3, 4, 5 hours in the morning as I'm working. So I hear all these programs in the morning, particularly. Some of them in the afternoon, late afternoon, and others in the evening, and some even after midnight. Much of the, let's say, more honest or more truthful information generally is on between midnight and 5 a.m. on KPFK. There's a guy named Roy Tuckman who has a show called Something's Happening that, while in some regards he's misled and he's in the leftist camp and he carries that leftist message.
Mm-hmm.
In many other areas, he has a lot of enlightening topics, and he does a lot of tapes, etc., that I find enjoyable. Some of it I find boring at this point, but much of it I've enjoyed. Is even a woman who's on his show for 1 or 2 hours, I think it's on Wednesday, black woman named Evan Ray, and she tends to have pretty good guest. She also gets misled. I've noticed she can be manipulated by, let's say, people who pretend to be whistleblowers, but they're really working for the other side as propagandists. However, I was thinking when I was listening to your show yesterday, the first part of your show, at least, you were doing a good monologue, I was thinking to myself how revolutionary it would be if the tens of thousands of people who listen to KPFK and to the millions of people who listen to NPR, what if they could hear your talks, these, you know, 1-2 hour monologues that you've done so often on this show? What if they could hear that? I think, oh my God, this would cause a sea change in orientation in this country. And I think it's such a pity that that we couldn't, you know, and more people couldn't hear you. Now, I realize your presence is growing on this outlet, and you're probably going to continue to accelerate. You seem to be on a definitely steep upward climb. So probably in the years to come, you're going to likely have a much larger broadcast audience, in which perhaps you will be carried on AM, FM stations, affiliates, and that sort of thing. And I certainly hope that happens, because I think you're going to make a dramatic difference in helping to undo the mind-washing and the brainwashing that's going on with stations like KPFK. I don't know which of these players are sincere in their work. Some of them I know. KPFK, there's a guy named Ian Masters who's on every Sunday. This guy's definitely working for the other side. He's about as hidden a, you know, a kind of a CIA prop guy than you know, E. Howard Hunt was. You know, he's the guy's pretty transparent if you've been listening to him for the last 6 or 7 or 8 years like I have. And the guy is whatever is the popular posture at the moment, that's the one he embraces. So when they attacked Iraq, he was all gung-ho against, you know, the 19 Arab hijackers, and we're gonna, you know, get these, you know, he was all gung-ho with the Bush administration until in the last couple of years, in which the, you know, the atrocities and the Nazi-like behavior of our troops over there murdering so many people became blatantly evident to anybody. Now he's the anti-war candidate. I remember very well how he was cheerleading when did we go into Afghanistan? I think it was in April or so of 2002. He was cheerleading all through those years. So the first 3 or 4 years, just the total Bush cheerleader all the way. And then when things go sour, he's changing his posture. Alex Constantine, who has a wonderful website and has written many fabulous books, has done a series of articles exposing the personalities at KPFK and what's really going on behind the scenes. And he particularly digs into Ian Masters. So anyone who really wants to, particularly if you're on the West Coast, you probably can hear this station.
Well, you can listen online with a lot of them now, too. They're online, and they're picked up in some other areas, you know, in maybe some minor syndication, but nonetheless, you know, affiliated around the country.
Right. So yeah. I just want to emphasize that most of what people hear on the radio, AM radio, is disastrous. You have brainwashers like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, those hacks are just dominate, own the AM radio stations. There is no, I can't find one AM radio talk show host that even comes slightly close to being honest about the political situation. Mm-hmm. It's usually pro-Republican people. They're usually defensive of the Bush regime. And then when you get to FM stations like KPFK, they're you know, supposedly, well, today they call themselves progressives. I guess liberal is considered a bad word now. So they constantly embrace the term progressive. But I know they're most, particularly the, you know, the listeners and people who are dumb enough to actually contribute this unending fundraisers at KPFK is just disgusting. I remember in earlier years, they had fundraising, I think it was 4 times a year, so about every 3 months they would go through 1 week of fundraising. Well, now it seems like it's every 6 weeks, It's a 2 or 3 or 4 week fundraising marathon all day long. So once, you know, they've grown so big that they've established these budgets, $1 million plus budgets. And they've decided that no matter what, they're just going to keep on fundraising until they meet their budget quota. And if they have to fundraise 365 days a year, that's what they're going to do. The idea that they're, you know, gone way too far in excessive fundraising and burdening listeners, etc., apparently hasn't occurred to them yet. I know they've, a lot of people who had pledged in earlier fund drives in the last 6 to 8 months or so simply aren't sending in the money. Now, whether it's probably they don't have it, or they're getting worried about the economy and they've thought twice about, you know.
Well, you know, they're secretly funded by all these government programs, number one, and then their programming is funded by foundations all over the place.
Yes, right, and that is important to remember, because they we brought this up on previous talks too.
Yes.
They will constantly say that they're independent. This is the voice of. They have a number of cliche expressions they use, but the voice of independence and freedom, and this is your station of what's the words they use? They make a play in words of
no, they say Idea Stream is the new one they're using.
Yeah, Freedom Radio. There's one called. They have different programs. They keep on throwing around the word freedom. Okay. Anyway, you're quite right. This people who think that they're posturing themselves to the public as if they're depending on the public for their funding. And if you don't send in your donation, and get your DVDs or whatever they're offering for prizes or gifts, premium gifts, that the station won't be it. That's not true at all. They are funded in many cases by governmental organizations like the Ford Foundation. That's not supposed to be a government foundation, but in fact it's a CIA front.
Or and, the Annenberg Foundation. Or
the foundations, right. They're getting money from the same elite owners of these foundations, the controllers of these foundations. It doesn't matter whether they call themselves, you know, the Rockefeller Standard Oil or whatever, their corporate Exxon. It doesn't matter whether you get a check from the corporation of Exxon or the Rockefeller Foundation. You're getting the money. That's the point. And who's sending you the money? And so anyone who's thinking that they're keep buoying these people, no. What they always do, just like the Nazis forced their victims in, you know, World War II in Europe before they killed them, they made them dig their own trench graves, and then they shot them in the back of the head. The Illuminati always makes you pay for whatever deceit or butchery or betrayal they're going to put upon you. They make you pay. They make you pay for it. And this is
very and they made sure that they could raid your bank accounts too. That's
of
the
course.
Part of the history that they seldom, if ever, disclose, is that the Rothschilds banked all that money that was and this is where they supposedly made reparations later on. But that how much of that $1 trillion did they actually return? That's a conservative figure. Ken, we've got to take a break here at the end of the first hour.
Okay.
But I want to pick this up, and then I want to get into the issue of discernment, discerning all of this and coming up with some hypothetical situations where we can reestablish order, because this is all designed to produce chaos.
Yep.
And so when we come back, I'd like to discuss this a little
bit.
Folks,
exactly.
You're listening to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio, and our special guest, Ken Adachi, will be right back after a couple of short messages. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient that the human body needs for survival? 50% protein, 300 milligrams of potassium per ounce, and calcium and magnesium for your heart and bones, with many more nutrients found in this incredible food source that the government does not want you to have. This product is available in powder, seeds, and oil, and is shipped free to your door in the U.S. This product is illegal to grow in the U.S., but is legal to import. Don't waste time thinking about storing food. Plan ahead and prepare for yourself and your family now, and be in control of your destiny. You can save and invest your money, but in the end, food will be your greatest asset. Remember what the Word of God says in Ezekiel 7:19. Call 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Remember, food will be your greatest asset. Call 908-691-2608. This product does not contain THC. Call 908-691-2608 today.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Welcome back to Evident Footprints and segment number two with our special guest on this November the 12th on the East Coast, still November the 11th on the West Coast, and points in between are somewhere moving towards that time frame. Anyway, we're back with Ken Adachi. Ken, we were talking about all of this mind control that's going on, and they're using the public airwaves, and we've been talking about digital TV. Wouldn't it make sense for people to just get rid of their TVs?
Well, yes, actually, many people have said that, and particularly for children, the negative influence of TV programming on children. Parents who don't understand how their children's minds are being intentionally molded and manipulated towards this enslavement agenda, and the desensitization of children to violence and to cruelty and to warlike behavior, combat behavior, all these video games that sprang up and proliferated during the 70s and 80s and 90s and in what young child? I mean, thank God, you know, when I was a kid, we had plastic six shooters and Roy Rogers on TV, and it was kind of more of a wholesome type thing. I mean, all kids, at least boys, kind of go through that desire to play act, you know, cowboy and Indians and war, soldiers, that sort of thing. We all go through that, but these video programs require multiple hours of skill enhancement, so that I remember, you know, playing when I was a teenager, a young kid, playing a pinball machine was kind of that sort of fascination. You can easily get addicted to playing pinball machines because you want to get better at it. So you spend hours there, you know, learning how to rack up a lot of wins on a pinball machine. Well, that sort of addictive behavior was built into these violent video games. But what they're doing is they're shooting people, they're killing people, they're knocking people off. All these games had a combat, warlike theme. It could be the Middle Ages, or it could be, you know, World War II, or modern futuristic warfare or space warfare. But it's you know, it's always battles, and that of course is setting the kid up to become desensitized to violence and to create a mindset in which you, quote, win or lose depending on how good of a warrior you are. And that's why we have these TV programs like this SmackDown Wrestling, which I see on, I forget, here in Southern California. It's either Channel 5 or maybe it's the Fox stations, or 11 and 13. It's probably a Fox station. In which they have these, you know, these guys, you know, these big muscular wrestlers playing these very evil sort of looking guys, and it's all, you know, this gladiator type mentality that they're trying to push. And of course, football, same hockey, everything is combative in nature, with, you know, many national sports. So that whole exercise is geared towards keeping people, or, you know, encouraging people to be combative by nature.
Sure. Let me say this, Ken. There's definitely something afoot right now going on, and there was a similar phenomenon in the week or so, maybe 10 days leading up to the election on November the 4th. You know, we had Halloween on the 31st of October, for those that are challenged by their calendars. And for about a week or so before Halloween, or let's say that whole week, they did nothing but show monster movies, particularly on most of the channels that show movies. They were building this concept of a monster of every nature you can imagine, which is going into the subconscious of a whole nation full of people that are about to vote for a president of the United States.
Right.
And so by the time you get around to voting, you're picking the lesser of two evils. And I heard that mentioned thousands of times by people.
Yes. Yes.
There's no selection from the good. It's the lesser of two evils. Why are we picking presidents? And we're not, really. This is just the mantra that they're feeding us. This is the brainwashing. Well, it's the lesser of two evils. And so you have two evils. Which one is the worst monster, or the bigger monster of the two? You have that going on TV nonstop until the election. Election night, once they were finished making the decision that McCain was going to concede the election, which he did, and then Obama gave his little speech, and we got to see another monster come on the stage, and that was the Black Widow spider dress that Michelle Obama wore.
Wow.
The cryptic black dress with the red hourglass on it, meaning mess with my old man and I will eat you. Just like the female Black Widow. I mean, this is outright a voodoo exercise taking place in front of the people.
Right.
And right at the conclusion of all these monster movies, they switch then from coming out of that back to the Britney Spears saga.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, once again, Britney Spears becomes the focal point of the public's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then they shift the movies now to war movies. Everything is Navy and Air Force and all these battles taking place in foreign countries.
Right.
As if now they're conditioning us. Now we decided which person was going to either be the lesser or the greater of two monsters. And now we're being conditioned for some kind of false flag event. They're nonstop showing Pearl Harbor movies, Midway, the Sandpiper. They have all of these movies are being shown to reinforce these subconscious messages. Now, they're not serving any purpose. What are they doing? Are they Is this preparatory for another false flag event that they can say, okay, you know, we got this war now, we've been attacked again, we have to recruit some people and get some, build up our military. You see, it's never ending.
Yeah, I you make an excellent point. I started an article. When the heck did I first put it up? Was it 2002, 2000, I can't remember. I just called it the military draft, and I because of, at the time, Bush had invaded Afghanistan first, and then the following year, in spring of 2003, Iraq. And I expected within a year or two, I thought they were going to continue. I thought they would go to Iran, Syria, etc. And I felt they were just steamrolling their fascist war agenda forward, I thought. So I expected within a couple of years that the draft would be installed, because you can clearly see that a lot of young people are catching on to the deception of military recruitment slogans, commercials, ad, etc., and that recruitment's down. You get a lot more people joining the military during peace times than as when you have war. So with the Nazification of Army and Marines in Afghanistan and Iraq, they've just, so many of them have succumbed to being murderers for the Pentagon. I just heard a statistic yesterday on the radio that there are 18 returning vets per day committing suicide. 18 a day who have returned from Afghanistan and Iraq. That's a lot of people.
Now you're saying they're committing suicide
they're returning vets who, because of remorse over the killing of civilians, there's 18 new vets each day who, have already returned, gotten out of the service, et cetera.
Now, if I use my discernment, I would have to say that they have been programmed to do that just to silence them, to keep them from describing the atrocities that are being committed. And they're coming back as these dysfunctional beings, when in reality they probably have been drugged and programmed to do this.
Well, you may well be right, Don. You get a lot of psychic impressions that I don't get. And I do know for many years, because it's been discussed by people who were in the space, and particularly David Icke exposed this in his books as well, they have been programming with mind control special forces for probably 20 years or so, or perhaps even earlier. It's possible even during the Vietnam era they were had assassination teams that were programmed, because Al Bielek points out that they were even programming Nazis during World War II. They had rudimentary electronic programming, and they would be beaming these guys from the back of the room. It was hitting them right in the back part of the head, the back portion of their skull, and they was, SS guys, etc. So anyone who's a part of any sort of elite special forces, Navy SEALs, Berets, Green Berets, special forces, this Delta teams, particularly Delta teams, that's kind of the top of the heap when it comes to programmed what they call supermen, programmed in individuals who have way above normal physical capabilities, because they've been mind controlled. Andy Perot being an example of of those individuals who was mind controlled and trained to have superhuman capabilities. What's his name? There's a guy. He used to be on the circuit in the 90s, there in the mid 90s. I can't remember. Bo Gritz. I came to distrust Bo Gritz, but he did expose this, this aspect of Delta Force's, our program. So you can imagine how many of these teams, both the British and the Americans, use to carry out covert operations in Afghanistan and Iraq from the very beginning. You know, they've instigated many of these so-called attacks by insurgents, you know. Excuse me.
I've even heard stories, Ken, of them taking groups of kids over to Vietnam, highly trained in certain psychic, let's say, mind weaponry technologies, that they would get these kids there and basically cause things like spontaneous combustion and just every unimaginable deed that somebody could produce from the depths of darkness. They had these kids doing these together. Have you heard any of that?
Well,
remember,
thank you for reminding me. First, Bryce Taylor in her books points out that she was used to demonstrate how she could do things with her mind. She could, for instance, start a fire in a wastebasket across the room. The controller handler told her, you know, start a fire in that wastebasket on the opposite side of the room, and she could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know my Canadian friend Z.S. Livingstone, who has many essays posted on my website, was in correspondence with a man in Britain who has unusual abilities, both psychic, and he's able to remote view as well as travel in astral. And he discovered groups of children in London that are being used by British intelligence and British military for both remote viewing, what they call remote influencing. This is causing people, for instance, you can psychically kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can cause them physical pain, and that's what remote influencing is. So apparently children, because of their youth, they have higher adaptability to access this world, the astral world. And so apparently that's why they use kids. Now, I didn't know about the Vietnam thing until you mentioned it. But when you said children, that immediately caused me to remember this conversation that I had with Z.S. Livingstone about this group of children that this British fellow who's able to travel in the astral encountered. He actually went to the site where they were at and saw them all. Actually, I shouldn't get into details what happened, but let's say he neutralized the situation. But he was surprised that there was kids being used, all of them under mind control.
Mm-hmm.
Don Cross mentioned in earlier essays that he used to post to my website that there's a proliferation of kids in this country that they called MK kids in his essays, referring to, I suppose, MK Ultra programming. But there are literally millions of mind-controlled teenagers, post-teenagers in this country, because Al Bielek mentioned in his discussion of the Montauk Project that they have an electronic programming center in every major city in North America, in which they're bringing in kids, teenagers, and of course the kids don't know they're being programmed. They might be watching something on a screen, for instance, and their conscious mind is just viewing a video or a DVD or something. But in the space within that room, though, other signals, microwave signals, are being beamed straight into their brain, which they can easily access now. This is why so many people are hearing voices in the skull and all that, because of these microwave networks that are all around us now. They've had the technology since Wilhelm Reich discovered it in the late 40s. What frequency bands will penetrate the human skull, and they can... So anyway, what they're doing is they're uploading mind control programming into their subconscious mind. Now, this is amazing. They are programming people in a space of 30 minutes to an hour, full computer, you know, produced mind control programming. This used to take years, dozens of years, to affect an adult when they were using trauma-based programming. It was very laborious and obviously extremely painful and horrendous to the victim. But now the Montauk Project succeeded in programming unsuspecting people with mind control, without their knowledge, electronically. So there are millions of these kids that are can be turned on, if you will, or receive a signal either through the microwave network. It can be injected directly into their brain, and they could be commanded to do something because the programming is in place. They would react like a robot, and the school shooters are the best examples of that. It's not the most recent, but the national one a couple of years ago, or a year and a half. I can't remember exactly. The Virginia Tech shooting, was that in 2006? Do I have the time frame right?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was pretty recently. Wasn't it even in 2007? Seems like it was.
It could be. For some reason, I'm going back two years. Maybe it is only 1 year. Okay, that individual is very typical of a mind-controlled individual. Those Columbine shooter kids, definitely mind-controlled, no question about it.
Well, his sister worked for the CIA, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, exactly, right. When you start looking at the individuals, you see the fathers is involved, CIA or the military, you will always, those Columbine shooters, Klebold, and forget the other guy's name, but, they're involved in satanic activity. Sure, it's mind control. In my opinion, all school shooters, particularly the ones who kill themselves, or supposedly kill themselves, it's hard to say in the case of Virginia Tech or Columbine whether they kill themselves or the special forces who went in, masquerading as local police, actually killed them. My guess is the Columbine shooters were probably killed. To be sure they wouldn't have anything to say. And probably that Virginia Tech shooter, too. But they're certainly programmed to shoot themselves after they've done their deed. So those all cases of mind control. There's no question in my mind. There's not one. This goes back to Charles Whitman, Texas Tower, I think early 60s, 63 perhaps, 62, 64. University of Texas, he went up into the bell tower there, and he had a rifle, and he was shooting students, on the campus, and he was trapped up there for so many hours, and he was, had a siege like situation, and eventually a cop got up there and shot him. But David Icke did a very good review of that guy's history. He was being treated by psychiatrists there, and the guy was programmed. There's no question. He was the early, what they refer to as beta testing.
Mm-hmm.
To see how those programs work, but I'm convinced that because they all follow the same patterns. School shooters always go on this inexplicable rampage and then kill themselves in the end. It's patterns identical. And I had a Russian doctor who moved to Germany contact me about a year and a half ago, and he was saying you will always find, because he says he was sent to a detention camp himself when the Soviets were still in power, and he said they were mind controlling prisoners in the camp, and he explained to me how the newspapers will always print tip offs to the event that's going to come. I mean, I've yet to I wanted to do a long a series of articles based on this man's information. He provided some fabulous info on how the newspapers will print tip-offs that a shooting is going to take place, and so they're sort of like communicating among the inside players when these events are going to come up. And it's so he was telling me, not so long ago there was these sort of shootings, I think, school-type shootings in Sweden, or there were some European countries in which you had these same inexplicable, school shootings. Just some guy who seemed to be a lone nut. They always frame it the newspapers will always frame it that way. A loner. He didn't have many friends, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, okay, so, as usual, we've gotten off into many tangents, but I began the first hour by just sort of reviewing the reality of we're being betrayed, and that the general public needs to recognize that and stop giving their time and attention to debates between Republicans, Democrats, conservative, liberal. That is meaningless hogwash. And the reason I get so frustrated with KPFK, for instance, is that while I heard so many useful types of reporting about the misbehavior of the Bush regime, etc., they have this absolutely unfounded hope or dream that, or assumption that once Barack Obama actually sworn in on January 20th, he's going to do a 180 about the war. They're just convinced that he's just playing to the Republican power structure, but once he's actually in command and he's got all his people assigned, I keep on hearing this on these people. They say, well, we're assuming that he's going to, we'll have to keep his feet to the fire. I was hearing two or three people this morning on Amy Goodman and Sonali Kohutkar show say that, you know, we've got to keep their feet to the fire. These individuals, and then you have so many people who are celebrating the fact that, Barack being a black man has finally ascended to the presidency, and they're calling him an Afro-American. He's not Afro, and he's not American. And they're just deceiving themselves. They're just really starry-eyed, and it just bothers me. Particularly black people tend to be more, spiritually honest, let's say, than other groups in this country, well, except perhaps Indians, Native Americans. But they tend to be, like, spiritually very much in-tune people. And they're, unfortunately, too many of them are easily duped. There's a large percentage of them that buy into the leftist, quote, progressive pigeonhole. And they just stay there. So that's what I heard this morning. Most of these people were celebrating the fact that Barack is the first black to ascend to this position, and that they've finally, one lady was mentioning, one black writer was mentioning that he's now going to be living in the house that was built by black slaves. Well, I'm not sure the White House was built by black slaves. I'm sure they probably had black people as laborers, but it seemed to me that skilled carpenters and masons, etc., were responsible for actually rebuilding the White House after the British burned it down the first time around. Anyway, you hear a lot of these statements that, and they're totally ignorant of the facts that you expose in your articles about Obama. He's an infiltrator into the country, probably born in Indonesia, you're guesstimating, and probably not the son of Stanley Ann Dunham, and certainly not the son of Barack Obama Sr., for sure.
Yeah, the preponderance of evidence disputes everything published in his autobiographies or by the media. In fact, the media media can't even agree with dates and places themselves, let alone with what he has written. His own writings differ from one account to the next.
Right.
It's just beyond me that other than everybody is just so dumbed down, they don't even care. No one cares. No one pays attention to the details.
Yeah, there's a large... of course, I'm talking about people that I'm hearing on KPFK. These are the people who they interview and talk to. They are expressing these opinions. But, again, unfortunately, tens of thousands of people are listening to them. And if that's all they're hearing, that's why I was so it would be so nice if someone who's expressing like Don Nikoloff, if you could be heard by tens of thousands every single morning. Like I'm forced to listen to KPFK because there's only two stations that have any talk that's worthy of listening to. I've gone from one end of the FM dial to the other, just trying to find you. You have a couple stations, you know, the far right. I shouldn't say far right, but the Christian fundamentalist radio stations. I can't listen to that. I mean, that's just insane brainwashing. And then you know, there's music. More than 60% of the FM radio stations are in Spanish, and easily 70% of the UHF television stations are in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So you're limited to how much English you hear on radio or TV here in Southern California. And of those, there's only two. There's only two that have any talk that's worth listening to. And then when I try going to FAM, oh my God, I mean, it's unbelievable. First, there's the unending barrage of commercials on AM that just kill you. Every 2 minutes, another ear-pounding commercial. And then when you get to who's doing the hosting the shows, well, Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and Roger Hedgecock, and I listen for a while just to try to, for the variety, and then I hear them, and what they're saying is often just complete rubbish. You know, they're often, particularly Limbaugh. I used to actually take Limbaugh seriously in the late 80s when he first showed up, and my God, it's insane listening to him. So who can listen to that? I can't.
Yeah. You know, while you were talking, Ken, you reminded me of something, and this is another digression, but I want to show you how we can tie this into what's happening today, how easy this is if you pay attention to little details. You remember back in the 1960s, let's say in the mid-1960s, there was an individual by the name of Richard Speck.
Oh, absolutely, yes. The Chicago...
Yes, he murdered eight nurses in one night. Mm-hmm. Nursing students, I guess they were.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were nurses from a hospital in South Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's some interesting facts, and I've been pointing this out in my genealogy work, that these dates mean something. They have great, great significance somewhere in as to how these people play roles. I'll give you a quick example, and then I want to go into this thing about Richard Speck. And let's look at Stanley Ann Dunham, the purported mother to Barack Obama. She was born November 29th, 1942, so the story goes. He chooses Rahm Emanuel for his chief of staff at the White House. Rahm Emanuel happens to be an Israeli, or at least he was an Israeli soldier that worked for Israeli special forces, and so he may have dual citizenship, that which should raise a question. But interestingly, he shares a birthday with Stanley Ann Dunham, November 29th, and you have this amazing sequence of deaths that occur in the family. November 7th for Stanley Ann, although she appears to be still alive. She's gotten older on the internet. Her age has progressed exactly to the age she should be today, even though she supposedly died in 1995. And then we have her mother mysteriously dying November 3rd, the day before the election. At least that's the story. I suspect that she's still alive. They just moved her someplace where the media can't get to her and ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Speck, let's look at some things about Speck. Speck lived exactly 50 years to the day. He's born December 6th, 1941. What's the significance of that day? Well, it's the day before Pearl Harbor. I'm not suggesting it has anything to do with Pearl Harbor.
Yep.
He died December 5th, 1991, exactly 50 years later.
Right. Wow.
Okay. These things are not accidents. There's a great meaning. There's a great amount of preparation that go into these events, which you know what I'm suggesting here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just remind me, was he executed or did he die in jail?
Well, he got the death penalty, but he died
before.
While he was serving a life sentence. I guess it was commuted to a life sentence.
Okay.
And so now, why he died, or what did he die from? I don't know exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There's a section here. I'm looking at the wonderful Wikipedia. This is the gospel of the internet.
Yes.
Article.
I know.
Let's see. Well, it says one day before his 50th birthday. Technically, he lived, you know, a full 50 years. Find that extremely interesting.
Yep.
They performed a neuropathology examination or pathological examination on his brain and found apparent gross abnormalities. Evidently, He had some blurry areas in the hippocampus region, which is the memory, and the amygdala, which deals with rage and other strong emotions. I find that interesting, though, nonetheless. And who's to say what the actual cause was, if that was it, or, you know, I tend to think people pay real close attention to these events and the calendars. And just looking at these dates, I find it uncanny that he dies exactly the day before his birthday, and that his birthday was the day before Pearl Harbor.
Yep. There is this need to make note of dates, because these groups are tied into magic, black magic and all that, and the ritual aspects of location and date is a theme that shows up repeatedly. Now, I don't know the inside information, but I would just speculate that it has to do with...
No pun intended, right?
No pun intended, that it has to do with, demonic, let's say, supportive activity somehow is greater at certain times and certain dates and certain locations. And they seem to insist on the elements of the date and the time and location to be preordained in order to somehow maximize the... influence of the demonic realm, I believe. That seems reasonable to me as to why they insist on certain dates. And
now, his father supposedly died when he was six, which would mean his father died in the year they founded the CIA. And just for this is another interesting tidbit here. His father's name was Benjamin Franklin Speck. So here we have another one of these, founding father names like we have in the McCain family, Andrew Hamilton McCain.
Yes, very, very good. Very good. And I was about to mention, too, since you brought it up, I have a number. I inherited somebody's library a number of years ago, and it contained a number of books by Aleister Crowley, plus other P. Manley Hall, etc., in which in other books, essentially on black magic. And when you start reading the data, you can see how the elements of the numbers, the numerology, the date, and the location is very important in these rituals, and Crowley particularly goes into detail why it's important. He had various rituals. It was a kind of a murder ritual in which they supposedly absorb the life force of a young baby, and they call it the Moonchild ritual or something along that. But they're very specific when it's to be done, you know, on a full moon, a particular time frame, etc.
Yeah, that's their modus, generally speaking. Sometimes it has something to do with astrology. Of course, you know, you have to really be into astrology to see that. But these rituals are planned over decades. These events are planned to occur in certain places at certain times, like you said, on certain dates with certain types of people even being the victims. And they have the number of the victims calculated, and this all takes place.
The long range planning is rather important. The point that you made that needs to be echoed. The planning does span really hundreds of years and many generations. Savali, in her essays and interviews, mentions the importance of the multi-generational following of the agenda, because here in the United States, you know, the destruction of the government was laid out in 1776, the same year that, you know, the Declaration of Independence was signed. So, they recognize that, and they realize that it's, or they intentionally space it out, so they can gradually install it. Now we're seeing a huge acceleration in installing the New World Order. So, in the last part of the show here, I want to take a little time, though, while we've reviewed the deception of what we're facing, the betrayal and the deception we're being bombarded with, and while people shouldn't easily be sucked into this day-to-day, daily milieu of Democrats, Republicans, liberals, you know, all that crap. It's just a smokescreen. And they gotta look at the big picture. We're being poisoned daily with chemtrails. This has been going on since 1998. This is the 10th year. And what they're doing is they're dropping, different types of toxic and substances that are softening up in our immune system, so that we will be primed, let's say, to quickly to succumb to lethal diseases that they plan on distributing in the future. I'm thinking the Spanish flu virus that they've weaponized in 1918. Probably the bird flu virus that they talk about, et cetera. At least that's their plans. However, I want to remind listeners of a few things, and that is whatever disease system they plan on spreading to the general public, any disease, it's possible to survive and to overcome. So we shouldn't allow ourselves to be unduly frightened by these many essays that you find on the internet that talk about these plans to reduce the world's population to 500 million or so. Now, I've written that myself when I first put together my New World Order overview, which I typed out in 1996. I mentioned then that from my reading, what I've gleaned is the goal is to limit the Earth's population about 500 million. And the chemtrails are just one of the vehicles that they're using. They're planning on crippling people's immune system so that when they, spread these highly weaponized viruses, etc. Now, what people don't want to do is that another vehicle they're going to use to try to infect the population are vaccines. I've had many articles on my website about the dangers of vaccine, but you should know it goes beyond just the ill-advised use of legitimate vaccines. You got to realize that the vaccines that we're going to be getting now in the future will have these bugs, you know, probably avian flu. In fact, I just was told by a healer friend of mine who's been advising me on information for a long time that she was just working with someone who's a nurse who went to some meeting. I need to get the details of this, but it was discussed that I need to write this on my website too, but I'll say it here so I can get the word out, that they're now promoting or will promote a new type of, quote, flu vaccine in which you inhale a mist. It's a nasal absorption thing. And she says that so-called vaccine is in fact laced with the bird flu of virus. So she says, she advised me, you know, you need to tell people, don't fall for any of these stampedes to get your fast and easy, quick, convenient, inhalable vaccination against flu or whatever they're going to come up with. She says, we have to remember that the vast, large numbers of men who went to the first Gulf War, I forget the number, at least 250,000, it was in that range, came down with what was called the Gulf War syndrome. Now, very young people probably don't even know about this, but the government, in this process of betraying us, always goes through field tests. They just don't, you know, try this stuff without having thoroughly tested and knowing what the results will be when they spring it on the general population. So they often use prisoners in jail or prison to experiment on, or they use U.S. servicemen, and they use the pretext of the Gulf War to inject a lot of guys with a type of pathogen, bioengineered pathogen, later identified as a weaponized mycoplasma organism, which is normally a benign organism that's in the soil, but when you take it into a lab and you fool around with the genes and you weaponize it, then it becomes what was called Gulf War syndrome, and that not only affected the men who got it, many of them died, but also their families. They passed this on to their wives and their kids. So the government is in the hands of traitors. They're trying to eliminate us. We have to remember this. So it's a mistake to get any vaccination, no matter what the pretext is, or no matter what the day may come with. They say you must get it, it's mandatory, blah blah blah. No. Nothing.
It's pointless to count on the media to start reporting the truth about this.
No,
it's not going to
happen. They'll just carry the cover story that. What they'll do, I suppose, when they start these more lethal outbreaks of people start dropping like flies. I'm thinking now it might not go down this way because I'm getting to that point. We might have help. We've already had help in the past, but let's just look at the worst scenario first. This is what they're planning. When people start to drop, a lot of people start to drop, like in 1918, I don't know how many, a couple hundred thousand or 300,000 or so in the U.S. died in the Spanish flu outbreak. What will happen is that they will use that as a pretext to stampede people to getting their vaccine against this. And, of course, they'll be giving the disease to them in the vaccine. That's why you don't want to take the vaccine. It will contain the very organism that you think you're being protected against.
Well, they're giving the athletes flu shots. I heard a rookie basketball player, give his account of the first thing they did was send them to the Cleveland Clinic to get their flu shots.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine these, if they've gotten shots laced with the flu virus, and these guys are breathing hot and heavy in a venue that's got between 15,000 and 20,000 people sitting there in a closed in environment. These people are going to leave that event and spread it like wildfire.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure someone listening to this tape who's not familiar with the New World Order agenda is highly skeptical of what we're saying. We'll use this part of our talk as their excuse for dismissing the entire talk, because they'll say, oh, that's crazy. Are you kidding me? You know, I've gotten these emails over the years when you get some new reader who just stumbles upon the info I put on my site, but they're conditioned, they're locked into the mindset that the government, these plotters, have been incubating in you all your life. You got to realize this. You know, the average American citizen, because of television, school system, etc., has been nursed along in a certain belief system. And so naturally, there was the, before I woke up about the New World Order in 1994, I didn't have a clue. I perhaps if I heard this, I would have listened to it. I generally don't just dismiss things that are outside my normal frame, but it doesn't mean I would necessarily totally believe it either. But I understand. But here's the problem. The reason you and I are talking about this is we're not doing this just in the interest of gaining an audience or selling a book or some monetary gain. I'm doing, what you're doing, is we wish to help humanity. And it's just too bad those people who are so locked down into the conditioning in which they, you know, just knee-jerk react to this with incredulity. Okay, too bad. I don't care. If those people who don't want to believe it, go ahead, have a nice day. What are you reading my website for if you don't believe it? Just go away. I don't care. I got to make that point. Too many people send me angry emails like, it's my obligation to now call them up and invest hours of my time to try to convince them and win them over. I ain't trying to do that. I'm trying to do the best I can to alert those with the eyes to see and the ears to hear. And for the vast majority of humanity who is dumbed down, who will not listen, who won't accept this, who will be a knee-jerk skeptic, it's okay. You're going to pay the price for your stupidity, your lack of discernment, your lack of awareness. I'm not afraid to die, but maybe you are. I know where I'm going. Maybe you don't. So if you want to experience that and just ignore these words and ignore these warnings, it's okay with me. It's not going to change my my course of life one iota. I just put it out there, and then we have this little thing called free will, and you can take it or leave it, pal. I don't care. Excuse me, that's the wrong expression. It's no sweat off my nose if people don't buy it. I'm not trying to sell anything. I'm just trying to help. I'm getting out the message the way I see it, discern it, interpret it, understand it, and I'm just doing the best I can, and if you don't accept it, that's okay with me. It doesn't bother me. I have no fear at all of dying. And
hey, Ken, I would like to share something with you. I think it's appropriate concerning what you're talking about right now. And this won't take too long. I want to read an email that was sent to the Idaho Observer. I feel I can do this because it was addressed to me, and it ended up in my mailbox. And I'd like to read my response to the person that wrote this.
Okay.
But this is an indication to me that this person who's claiming they read my article, The Three Stooges Go to Washington, is now making ridiculous statements attributing Barack Obama's own statements to me. This is the way people perceive things. So I want to address this, if I may do so.
Yeah, cool.
Okay. This is from an anonymous reader, okay, sent into the Idaho Observer. I actually went on to finish reading Don Nikoloff's piece about Obama. I have some things to add to this, just a sense worth. I knew Obama was a rising star, a la Kay Griggs terminology. He has likely been sodomized and controlled since he was a child, as they pick boys who have no father presence to mold into their puppets. Hence, all of his homosexual activities, which are not true homosexuality, but rather the outgrowth of the type of intimacy engage in as a child. The fact that he went to Occidental Rising Star College makes sense. He was enrolled there as he was enrolled in everything else in his life. About East 98th Street in New York, where Nikoloff said he discussed gunfire with his Puerto Rican neighbors. Untrue. Obama would have been at Columbia University when I was there, and I knew his 94th Street well. It is not East Harlem, which didn't begin until 110th Street at the time. I worked in New York City in that very neighborhood, East 90s, in the early 80s. East 94th Street was very gentrified, with fairly expensive apartments for white people, not minorities. There was no gunfire going on along those blocks. So Obama was put up in an east side apartment so that he would not be mixing in with the other students at Columbia, most of whom lived in the dorms or in west side, 116th, crappy apartments. It would have been very strange for a regular Columbia student to be living on the Upper East Side by himself. He was most likely living with someone else who was handling him. The Syrian developer, who now has a lot next to O's $2 million house, is most likely Jewish. I never met a Muslim called Antoine. Rezko is either a Christian or Jewish name. Thus, I reacted when Nikoloff's article again made the very misleading statement that Obama is associated with Muslim radicals. The overthrows of African governments have been led and supported by the Zionists to get control of minerals and African resources. Obama is associated with Jewish radicals, not Muslims, as seen by his appointment of Irgun Spahn Rahm Emanuel to his inside team. These misstatements create over and over again that we are to be afraid of Muslims when all along it's Jews that are running and destroying things. Unquote. Now, for the most part, I have to disagree with everything this guy said. except where he's agreeing with some of the conclusions I arrived at. For the most part, he's bickering with what Obama has written.
Exactly.
Or what the Chicago Sun-Times has written. I merely identified the people with whom he was affiliated. And Rezko was tried, convicted, on 16 counts of fraud. Real estate fraud being the majority of those charges. I didn't give Antoine Rezko his name. His parents gave him that name, or the intelligence agency he's working for, and he's noted to be a Syrian. So these are the types of accusations that readers make. And now, if I may, I'd like to read my response, because I argue the point from the basis of someone who's looking at the truth, sharing the truth, and discerning what the truth is where the facts don't add up.
Okay.
And that's
let me just amplify something, just so listeners will know. At least I want to make this clearer. The letter you just read was sent by a reader into the Idaho Observer, which is the newspaper you publish your essays in. It wasn't addressed to you. It was addressed to the Idaho Observer. And the fellow writing the note is criticizing you, claiming that you had gotten locations and incidents wrong because he came from the New York area. He was a witness to the type of neighborhoods that were there, etc. And he's essentially, in his note, criticizing you for getting your facts wrong. What you're saying, because this has happened to me many times with readers who criticize my material, is that the reader read too quickly. He misinterpreted what was really information. The source of the information was not Don Nikoloff of you know, ran into this Puerto Rican, et cetera, in this neighborhood. It was Barack Obama. But the reader wasn't sharp enough to pick that up, and he jumped to the conclusion that this was your origination of this info. You proffered this info. I just wanted to make it very clear why you're rebutting this so that the listener understands. This has happened to me so many times. It's infuriating. These wise guys who write these sort of letters, and I've had them, you know, sent to me too, who think, you know, the author of that, and this guy doesn't even have the guts to put his name on there, thinking that they're such an astute critic when they can't even read the story accurately. They don't know who's speaking in, you know, who is the author of a given word or phrase.
Well, I put those statements of Obama's, I gave him full attribution. It was in his book.
Of course.
And I put it in quotation marks.
Exactly, but this guy was too blind to see that. That's why I want to amplify the annoyance of these people who write this sort of criticism. Very often it's half-baked. These people are half-cocked and they don't know it. Go ahead.
Yeah, and here he's attacking an ethnic background, and I'm attacking the secret societies or secret societies,
right?
And all of
he,
these covert black
exactly.
ops organizations.
He simplified it down to you attacking the Muslims.
The Muslims, yep. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now hear my response here, because I think I handled all the issues as best one could without writing another book. Dear anonymous reader, and I pointed out that he was anonymous. Having read your assessments and analysis of my The Three Stooges Go to Washington Part 4 article in the October 2008 issue of the Idaho Observer, I would like to respond to your comments. In describing certain aspects of Barack Obama's experiences while enrolled at Occidental, Columbia, and Harvard, I merely quoted Obama's own declarations, whether true or false. They are his assertions, not mine. Why should I care whether or not he cavorted with Puerto Ricans, discussed gunfire, or slept in alleys with homeless drug addicts and alcoholics? I consider such associations far more wholesome than those he had in Kenya, Indonesia, or Hawaii. Obama's decision to alter the names of the salient characters from his formative years was intentional obfuscation, not courtesy. It is apparent that those names he omitted or did not accurately disclose happened to be of communist, Pakistani, Lebanese, Syrian, and other mainstream Christian persuasions. Am I attacking Muslims by identifying them? You seem to be suggesting just that. Untrue. And your conclusions omit the role played by the Rockefellers in financing this Wizard of Oz fiction called Barack Obama. Parts 3 and 4 clearly establish the association between the Dunhams and the Rockefellers. Therein lies the Zionist connection you so desperately seek. Regarding your comments about Obama's alleged homosexuality, drug use, etc., it is apparent that the Illuminists prepare their stooges for the roles they will play. We can assume that the Rockefeller Council on Foreign Relations connection still exists in that area as well. I humbly suggest you consider reading The Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 5, Barack Obama, New Revelations, which addresses issues which have come to light within the past month or so. The significance of Rahm Emanuel's appointment as chief of staff is clearly intended to appease Israel. Emanuel, coincidentally, was on the board of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and is now being duly rewarded for his efforts. The upcoming truth about the Dunhams' origins, their whereabouts, their CIA Nazi intelligence connections, and Stanley Ann's schooling will dispel the Kansas myth once and for all. The Illuminists' intentions to create a race war between black and white Americans as well as with Muslims worldwide is quite obvious. The Obama story has been created solely for that purpose while slowly leading us into a communist fascist dictatorship. Such are the methods of these characters, including both the Muslims and Zionists. Don't assume for one moment that I don't see or understand the game being played here. To accuse me of fomenting the hatred and vitriol created by these charlatans is equally misleading. I would not have and have not financed the murder of millions of innocent people throughout the world, especially in Kenya and Indonesia. They have. Obama's associations speak for themselves, whether Christian, Muslim, or Zionist. His problem is in deciding to which group he belongs. I am helping him sort that out. And I sign my name, Don Nikoloff.
I mean, it's a good response. Sometimes I wonder, Don, are they just agent provocateurs who are writing these sort of things just to tie up your time? Sometimes that's occurred to me, that they have, I mean, maybe it's probably not. It's probably just an individual who thinks a great deal of his intellectual capacity, realizing how he's completely missed the boat, and wants to play critic. That's probably the case, but sometimes I wonder, are they just sending us these people? I won't go into details, but I just got recently a couple emails from a guy who essentially wants to let me know how, you know, James Casbolt is being deceitful and deceitful, and he's plagiarizing and this and that. And it's so very clear to me that, in fact, I've gotten a few emails since putting up the Casbolt stuff, in which they want me to know whoever. And it's always there's usually a name there, but when you look at the email, you can't trace it. In fact, one of those addresses I'm going to talk to you about privately.
Uh-huh.
And, we'll see where it goes. But you always know you're hitting a nerve is when you get this type of feedback, in which they're telling you, "Oh no, this guy's crazy. He's way off." Then I know I'm on the right track. I did want to, you know, my original intention was to use the first hour to overview the deception game, so people, you know, would stop locking into this daily charade, but now I was going to spend the second hour really just talking about the fact that we are far more powerful beings than most people assume, and that we are not really victims of our circumstances the way we think we are or the way we see it. And I was sort of going to go into some metaphysical aspects of who we really are, but there's probably not enough time today, but maybe we'll go there next time we talk.
Yeah,
do want to focus on this aspect. Too many people are frightened, and I was just talking to a gal tonight. She had cancer, and she's really frightened. And I spent about 30 minutes, one of the reasons my voice is kind of hoarse, I spent about 30 or 45 minutes kind of reviewing the basics of, you know, the metaphysical basics of who we really are. And I was trying to, convince her, because she hadn't learned this when she was younger. She came from the Middle East. And so she's locked into the notion that she is the body. She sees the body, and she's very frightened of dying from cancer, et cetera. It's the normal reaction. But I was telling her, she'd never even heard of the subject of psychic healing.
Huh.
And I was telling her there are hundreds of books that teach people how to I emphasized, you know, the truth of the matter, which I, you know, only discovered myself in the last 10 or 12 years or so, is that we create reality with our thoughts. We are immortal beings that are residing within a human body, but we survive death. And we're exactly the same when we leave the body. You know, we have the same intelligence, we have the same sensitivity to everything. We have a wider perspective when we pass over into the spirit world, when we leave the, you know, the earthly vehicle. But I says, we're still the same people, the same dumbness, the same prejudice that you have here, you'll find that you have when you move into the spirit world. It's not like, you know, your hand at a harp. It doesn't work that way. So I was telling you that you can shape your body to your image, and that it sounds so implausible to say this, but it's a fact. It doesn't happen immediately. It's a gradual process. I used to know a guy up in Los Angeles. He was with the Los Angeles Dowsers Society, who used to do hypnosis sessions with women who wanted to enlarge their breasts naturally without using anything. And what he did is essentially programmed their subconscious mind to enlarge their breasts. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, they were paying him $6,000 for these therapies. And he was essentially convincing them, you know, the subconscious mind, to see their breasts growing daily. And, you know, they went from, you know, a 32 B cup or something up to, you know, 36 E cups. I mean, it's just amazing. And he told me this story about 10 years or so ago when I used to go up to the, maybe it's more like 8 years ago. I used to go to the L.A. Dowsers meeting. And at the time, you know, I was pretty blown away by that. I said, oh, it's remarkable. But now that I've learned much more about how the metaphysical laws, the rules of the road work, that's not remarkable at all. So I was telling this gal that you, in fact, people have healed themselves of all kinds of incurable diseases with their mind alone. I mean, some people go through the vehicle of, let's say, a fervent belief in Jesus or God. That's fine. Other people just essentially work through their higher self. That's okay, too. Once people realize that they can actually change their body internally and externally by projecting this image regularly, you can't just do this once. You know, it's a daily routine. But I told her that's what self-affirmation is all about. That's how it creates results. People either repeat a mantra or a phrase in which they absorb this information. And they apply this daily. I says, and anyone who prays daily, I mentioned this to you before, that I sort of accomplish things by praying before eating food. So that, you know, I'm going to do that at least 2 or 3 or 4 times a day. And I always have a certain set of things that I bring up and request to happen. So I'm projecting this events to. And I notice they do unfold. It's very subtle, and it's very slow and gradual, and you got to pay attention. It takes time to see it. But if you just hang in there, you'll see it. And so I was, you know, she had no idea. It just changed her whole, you know, she was quite down. She was, you know, rather, you know, worried, scared, all. She was going to get some test results, and she was afraid it was going to be positive. And
was she encouraged by you telling her all this? I mean, did she change her outlook, or?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's what, you know, I didn't plan on having this conversation. I just talked to her about inquiring about somebody else, and I just asked her, how are you doing? And then she started launching into this stuff. So I listened to it, and then I realized how frightened she was. So I started to talk, and I emphasize this, that, you know, you are consciousness, you are an immortal spirit within the body. And I told her, you know, you leave your body every night when you go to sleep. When you go into the dream world, your so-called astral body separates from your physical body, and you enter what's called the astral realm. And I says, when you're having dreams of doing X, Y, and Z, I says, you're really participating. These aren't fantasy movies in your head. I says, you're actually participating in these events in the astral realm. And I says, then you have these adventures at night, as it were. We usually don't remember them, but occasionally we do here and there remember something. So, for instance, I can often recall in a dream state flying. And I remember, you probably experienced this, but it's a thrill to fly.
I do it consciously. I mean,
well, I can't do it consciously, but I've often, wakened from a dream in which I was flying, and man, it's so exhilarating. And while we're talking about this, I had my best friend from childhood died a couple years ago, and I know a particularly good medium who contacted him. I talked to him for 45 minutes the day after his physical death. And I had conversations with him prior to his passing about the astral world. I was, he didn't know any of these things because neither he or I heard any of this information in where we were raised, in the environment we were raised in. So I would have these conversations with him. I would tell him about what's really going on, how, you go into the astral world when you dream. And I says, it's a thought world. And I says, you can, whatever you, let's say you want to go to a place, you don't have to travel, as it were, in space. I says, you're there. You just think of a place, and you'll find yourself there, because things materialize, appear instantaneously in the astral world by thought projection. So whatever you think you want or see or hold or whatever you imagine, you get the results immediately.
Yes,
and if you read the books of Robert Monroe, from the Monroe Institute, he talks about this. He put together three terrific books talking about his adventures in the astral realm. When he could easily leave his body, he would go to sleep, and leave his body and consciously remember everything he's doing. Then when he came back, he wrote about it. I mean, fantastic stuff. But
now it's quite interesting too, because the perceptions that we have in our physical body.
Yeah.
Say, for instance, if you went to bed at midnight, okay, and it was dark outside, and you fall asleep and you leave your body and go out, if you could be conscious of what you're seeing, it's not dark outside. In fact, you might pass a tree or some power lines or telephone lines,
and you see the aurora.
Well, you can see the birds sitting there sleeping.
Oh, I hear you.
And they watch you fly by, and they're quite startled because they see your light body. It's really an interesting and humorous phenomena.
Yes. Well, that's fantastic, Don. That's that you can have that much recall and memory. For me, I can't do it consciously, but I've experienced that. I would either wake up or, as in the morning, as you're coming out of the what's called the hypnagogic state, the transition between full sleeping and the conscious state, you're in that twilight zone there. Very often I can remember for 30 seconds or a minute or so what I was doing, and when I'm flying in these astral projections, it's just a gas. Well, anyway, getting back to my friend, Through a medium, I'm having a 45-minute conversation with him, just like I'm talking to you. Now, I can't hear his voice. Naturally, the medium is relaying what he's saying. But it's amazing. I'm having the same sort of casual conversation with him the day after he died. He's in the astral plane, of course, as I used to have with him on hundreds of occasions when he was alive on the phone. He lived on the East Coast. And he told me through the medium, he says... He's so thrilled because he says it's just the way you said it was going to be, referring to the astral plane. And he was having so much fun flying. He says, I can't get over how much fun it is to fly. And for instance, he used to be involved in the auto industry. And he says he was driving like a Ferrari all over the earth. He was just having a ball, because he just again, had to imagine a Ferrari in his mind that he's in it. And he's traveling all over, and he's saying he's flying, and he's going, walking through walls. My God, he says, what a gas. He was like a kid in Playland. It was amazing to hear him, not, you know, no remorse of having died. I mean, naturally we talked about, you know, wonderful sentimental things about, because we were, you know, we went to school together from the earliest age. And it was very nice, very touching and warm, you know, the exchanges about our personal life. And he, you know, he thanked me for the many ways in which I, you know, treated him in a way that made him feel happy and proud to be a friend. So all that was wonderful and touching. But much of the conversation was his giddiness over the sheer joy and the fun of, you know, being in the astral plane. Obviously, he wasn't encountering any negative entities or anything along that line. He was just, you know. You know, most people, after they pass, they hang around the earth at least for 3 days, because most people attend their own funeral or wake. So naturally, you know, he gave me messages for his wife and for his sisters, etc., to pass on to them, which I did. But so I was sort of relaying some of this to this gal with cancer, you know, and after we finished talking. She was in a totally different place. Now she's anxious to read this book on psychic healing, which I told her I would loan her. But her whole attitude turned around. Well, that's the way you get rid of disease, Don. Once you realize you are the architect of your reality, you can shape your life in the direction you want it to go. Once you realize that, then suddenly the Illuminati doesn't seem so all-powerful. And
yeah.
That's sort of where I want to go with these, with today's talk, is that they can project their plans of these super bio-weaponized killer pathogens all they want. It doesn't mean it's going to come down, because enough of us use our creation ability, we can put a kibosh on a lot of this stuff. That's why the SARS epidemic that was supposed to roar through North America back in 2004, if you remember, they quarantined, what's it, Vancouver for a week or so, the supposed SARS outbreak. That fizzled tremendously, as I mentioned, you know, I think in another talk we did. It fizzled because there were enough people, and I believe friendly aliens, both humans and aliens, who were using their thought projection to put a kibosh on that whole system. I know Slim Sperling's, it was a secret at the time, but he's passed now, but he had developed technologies that he was broadcasting a signal all over North America, not just, you know, in his local area. He had a toy that could broadcast for 2,500 miles. So he strategically placed these toys all around, and he had all of North America covered. And then that SARS thing just fizzled. Nothing. You don't hear a word about it. They had planned to make that a major epidemic deal. It didn't fly, did it? And this damn Spanish flu isn't going to fly either. And their bird flu isn't going to fly. Because we now know the secret. We can create reality with our mind, and we can counter anything they throw at us. And people need to know this, that there is nothing they could threaten us with that we cannot neutralize if enough of us are aware of it.
Which is a perfect reason why we shouldn't pay any attention to their methods to create fear.
Right.
Fear is just as much an illusion.
Right, it's a crippler. It's an absolute crippler, and it will just, that's why they feed these fear stories all the time on the internet to get you jacked up, to worry, because when you go into fear mode, you shut, or you, let's say, turn off the valve to this creative process. If you truly accepted the preposition I'm mentioning here, then you'd know that, that you can neutralize anything they throw at us.
Yeah.
And if hundreds of thousands, or better yet, millions and millions of people were fully aware of this concept and knew deep in their soul, not just intellectually, I'm talking deep emotional, subconscious knowledge that you can create reality, all of their agenda would crumble, Don, because we create reality with our thought. Everything we see in the world, it's a projection of our minds.
You're describing functions that occur in their natural state in the heart center.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been talking about this on the past shows that they have created what you could call the mind heart or the head heart, which is the association between the ego and the emotions that the ego has about itself and its own preservation.
Right.
So, I would like to keep going on with this, Ken, but we are out of time.
Right.
And we can certainly pick up the topic again when you come back on the 25th of this month.
Okay.
That's a couple of weeks from now, but who knows? Maybe we'll have you back as a surprise guest sometime.
Okay. So, well, I'm always at your service, Don. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, my purpose for reading that email was basically to share the thoughts that somebody had about my research, but in reality, they were all upset about the statements that Barack Obama had made. Those were not my statements.
Yes, right. No, I understand completely why you felt it was necessary, because the person really did miss the boat, as I said. That's why I want to make it clear to the listener that the that reader missed the boat. It's necessary. You know, your information is very information dense. You know, it's very rich, and you have to read carefully. You have to know who's speaking, who is talking at a given point. And of course, you're writing it correctly. He just read it too fast, and I've had that, and it's very vexing. I don't mind sparring with a critic, but please don't miss whose voice it is that's uttering the words, and then play critic with me. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous.
He can very well be right about what he's saying, but he's attributing the credit to the wrong person.
He's really missed a major point there. He's assigning this. The origin of this information to you. He missed the boat completely.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I know, and it does bother me when people like that. It tells me a great deal when they send as anonymous, and particularly when you can't, you know, they send these type of emails in which you can't answer them. It's an anonymous email. That tells me a whole lot right there. I used to respond to more of that in earlier years, but as the years go by, I can see that it isn't worth it. No, it isn't worth it.
I thought of sending him back an anonymous response so he could guess if it was me or Barack Obama responding. But Barack was too busy today, so... I just decided to attribute those statements to him. They were his statements, not mine. You know,
right? Yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah, I wonder how many years it's going to take for a large number of people to fully realize what information you've uncovered about Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
It is stunning what you've been able to dig up and. The bulk of the public misses 99% of it the first time through. They just can't, like this guy, he considers himself to be a sharp enough guy to respond back with a critical comment, but he missed some major stuff here. These revelations, this research that you've been doing about McCain, Obama, Hillary, others, it's heavy, Don, very heavy, and it's only because we talk so often on the phone that I'm privy to these details as you've uncovered them, and it probably, if I didn't know you personally and just was a casual reader, I wouldn't be catching it either. So I shouldn't pat myself on the back, but you really have come up with some stunning, stunning stuff here.
Well, there's more on the way.
Oh, yeah, I know.
More on the way. And I, by the way, I did get that that first grade picture. So now we know what Stanley Ann looks like, where she went to school in Oklahoma City. And that's a new discovery. You see, no one's reported that yet.
Exactly.
So this is pretty interesting.
Yeah,
getting
your,
exciting.
Your part five will go into detail.
Yes. So, Ken, I want to thank you. We got to move on here now and say goodnight to the folks, and so we can let our crew go home. Thanks for all your wonderful insight and information and your contribution to this discussion tonight. And I look forward to your next appearance on the 25th of November. In the meantime, I want to let all the listening audience know they can visit your website. And they can write to you at educate-yourself.org or educate-yourself.org. And I look forward to the next time.
Right. Okay,
and
great, Don. Thanks.
To Don Newsom, thank you for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, the listening audience for allowing us to share this time with you. Hope we've opened your eyes and your hearts to new possibilities and new potentialities. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.